We're currently faced with a crisis in Christianity, a life and death struggle between orthodoxy and heresy, between the kingdom of Christ and the kingdom of the cults.
The Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff, talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The prosperity gospel, it's nothing short of a wholesale transformation of Christianity. It's the glory of the cross supplanted by the glory of consumerism. It's a fast food Christianity. It's long on looks, but it is dreadfully short on substance.
You can meet and hear Hank Hanegraaff at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. You'll find a conference schedule, and you can register at issuesetc.org. Don't miss the premier conference for Christian laity, the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
What if we are here for a reason? What if we are a part of something truly divine? Imagine 91 billion light years traveled.
Sweet dreams are made of this.
Your father has accomplished something extraordinary. Also dangerous. And he's trapped by a darkness that's actively spreading throughout the universe. And the only one who can stop it is you. Be a warrior.
I'll try.
That is the trailer for Disney's latest incarnation of the book, A Wrinkle in Time. You hear the voice? Yes, that is the voice of Oprah Winfrey. It's a star-studded cast nonetheless. Criticism has been swift and the box office has been slow. Why is that? What changes has Disney made to this classic, A Wrinkle in Time? We're going to review the movie with Pastor Ted Geese. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
Many have been critical of the film adaptation of A Wrinkle in Time as less than faithful to the original material, the book from 1962. You say, in this case, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Why?
Well, because the source material is not a good representation of historic Christian teaching or scriptural truth. So if you take that stuff out, then you may end up being, you know, more faithful than if you'd left it in. So essentially, it gets into the territory of universalism. Like, to dive right into it, the stuff that they're complaining has been taken out is references to Jesus and scriptural quotations by certain characters. And these things were all part of the original book from 1962, but they are absent from the film. But the thing is that L'Engle, the writer of the book, she's a very liberal Episcopalian, so Anglican, and she had these real universalist ideas. And that is the way in which she approached Jesus and scripture and salvation, like soteriology, Christology, in the book that she wrote in 1962.
So you say that it essentially takes what was a liberal Christian story and turns it into a universalist story and turns it into a secular universalist story.
Yeah, or not even universalist per se, like, but just like a secular humanist fairy tale for kids. So it just takes it out of that kind of liberal mainline Protestant viewpoint and just shifts it over into secular humanism.
So what is the story that's being told in A Wrinkle in Time?
Okay, so the film version by DuVernay, the director, is and written actually, the adaptation is by two writers. So one, Jennifer Lee, who works for Disney and did the screenplay for Frozen, and also this guy, Jeff Stockwell, who did the screenplay for another children's book made into a film, Bridge to Terabithia. So together, these individuals put together this film for Disney, and the story that the film tells is the story of a young biracial African-American biracial lady, young teenage kid in the United States whose father has vanished. And he had vanished 4 years earlier and left his mother behind with their newly adopted little son, Charles Wallace. And they've been grieving the loss of their father for 4 years. Now, he didn't vanish like he went to the store to buy a pack of cigarettes and didn't come back. He vanished because he had this theory. He was a scientist who was working on this idea of traveling through space and time, as it were, by the power of the mind, instead of using like other physical ways of doing it, just being able to wrinkle time and go from place to place in the universe. So he was able to do this, apparently, and he's been gone for 4 years. And then the story has these three kind of, I'm going to use air quotes, celestial beings that show up, otherworldly beings, Mrs. What's-It, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Witch, played by Reese Witherspoon, Mindy Kaling, and Oprah Winfrey. And they tell the children that he's been trapped on a dark and dangerous world, and that they need to go and rescue him. So she needs to be the character of Meg, played by Storm Reid. She needs to be the warrior who goes and fights the darkness, retrieves her father, and her and her brother and a friend from school then go on this adventure throughout the universe to try to do this.
One of the things that's probably either going to attract or repel people from this is the casting. And you have quite a bit to say about the casting of Oprah Winfrey as Mrs. Witch, who kind of is the, you say this may end up just being kind of everyone who worships Oprah's fantasy of how Oprah truly appears in her divine form, something like that.
Yeah, this is, to use a big fancy technical word, this is like the apotheosis of Oprah. She is ascending to divinity the way that it's presented. The character itself is already a semi-divine being, so to speak, within the universe. And the way they describe it is that she is a part of the universe, just like Meg, the main character. So, you know, they kind of explain that away. But she is larger than life and all-powerful, almost. You know, her powers don't work in certain places, et cetera, et cetera. But this is the way that it's presented, very sage and spiritual, et cetera. So this is a very peculiar thing. Now, the big controversy that's kind of bubbled up around this film is, like we were just talking about, this removal of all of the overtly Christian, albeit left of center, you know, universalist sort of ideas of Christianity, the removal of that stuff out of the film, the final product. So let's say that the removal of all that stuff was intended to take the conversation about universalism and Jesus and all of that stuff off the table, to make a movie that really isn't about religious, spiritual things. Let's say that that's the idea. Well, then casting Oprah into the role of Mrs. Witch just brings all of that stuff back to the table again, because she's famously on her own TV programs and, you know, stuff, had moments where she has espoused very universalist notions, that Jesus, for instance, is not the only way, that it's not possible that he could be, etc. So, and she has her own branding as kind of this guru of spiritual but not religious kind of ideas in American and in the international world when it deals with these kinds of things.
Okay, so that's kind of the things that people are going to notice superficially about this story initially, that it deviates from its source material and that they've cast Oprah Winfrey along some other very legitimate big stars here, but she ends up somehow being the biggest star in that kind of goddess role. With the changes that have been made for the film, does it retain the kind of storytelling that have both attracted and kept so many readers to the original book?
I don't think it does. Well, there's a couple things. So still kind of just touching on this bit with Oprah and with Mindy Kaling and also with Reese Witherspoon. In the book, the 1962 novel, these characters are eventually it's stated, or like, you know, it comes out along the way in the story that they are stars in the heavens who then kind of also are guardian angels. So it's within the kind of Christian milieu. So if you have angels, like guardian angels, they work for someone. So again, that in the context of the story is, in the book, is that they would work for God, right? And unfortunately, the way the story unfolds in the book is that Jesus is just one of many warriors fighting against the darkness who have come from Earth. So then they put, like, you know, the originally the book, it had all sorts of people, Leonardo da Vinci and, you know, Pascal and Euclid and all these people connected that would all be on the same level as Jesus, or Jesus would be on the same level as them. So it's a screwed up kind of Christology. But however, the book still has the idea that ultimately there's a God and that these work for God. So in the case of this film, it turns it more into a pantheistic kind of a thing where they're all just part of the universe. And the character of Meg's dad, played by Chris Pine, you know, at different points he says, I just wanted to shake hands with the universe. You know, shake hands with the creator of everything, the universe. So when you take out, like, while it's good that they took out Jesus from everything, it does also create kind of a problem in the telling of the story that L'Engle actually originally wrote, if you know what I mean, which is very peculiar and interesting. Also, some of the other things kind of become distractions in the way that the story is being told. So another thing that there's been a lot of articles about floating around is the casting choices to take characters that were Caucasian, I guess, originally in the 1962 novel, and bring in more racial diversity in it. Now, that in and of itself doesn't actually change too much of the way the story is presented, because they go with kind of a biracial, like Filipino American boy as Charles Wallace. He has to be adopted and not be a biological child of the parents. But apart from that, it doesn't change a lot of the story. But I think the thing that it does do is that it became a distraction for DuVernay, it seems, because so much was focused on that, that other elements of the story that you need to have in the film to tell the story, the original story, they seem to go on the back burner. Like, you can make changes like that, but your number one job is to tell the story that you have to tell. So I think that this is where some of the problems start to come into it. For instance, another thing that they loved so much along the way, many people loved, was the focus on science, and also the idea that not just Meg's father, but also Meg's mother is also a scientist. And in the book, there's more emphasis on that. And in the film, there's actually less emphasis on that. So some of the things that they're taking out of the book when they make the film actually weaken certain characters. The men in the film don't fare too well either. But overall, the things that they're taking out tend to weaken the overall narrative structure and telling of the book.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We are reviewing the movie A Wrinkle in Time. When we come back, who is the intended audience of Disney's version? Stay tuned.
And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
What is a pietist? Do Lutherans fast? When our faith and our feelings go to war, who wins? Can a hymnal enrich your prayer life? What can medieval pilgrims teach Christians today about devotion? Find answers to these questions and more in the March issue of the Lutheran Witness. Subscribe to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's flagship magazine at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Friday afternoon, March the 16th, we are reviewing the movie A Wrinkle in Time. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts, and he taught a course at Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity and the Movie's Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. So who do you think is Disney's intended audience in their remake of this film and book, A Wrinkle in Time, Ted?
Well, I think from what I've been coming across, it sounds like the audience, like DuVernay wanted to make it mostly for young women of color, like African-American women more so, I think. I think that's her more specific audience. I don't want to go too far out on a limb on that. I mean, like, Disney wants to make money. They want to have a big movie that would appeal to people, but it seems like, you know, there was a, I came across something about a tweet that one of the details in it was that the character of Meg has to, Oprah says, like, as Mrs. Witch says at one point, you have to become one with the universe and one with yourself. And that, you know, the harder thing for her was going to be to become one with herself because she had low self-esteem, essentially, or a poor opinion of herself. And part of it was she didn't like her hair, you know, stuff like that. So, like, the boy in the says that he likes her hair and it bothers her. So there's this thing about the hair. Well, there was a tweet from one reviewer that said that, you know, he noticed this thing about the hair, and she was so happy about that because that really is the point of the whole thing. Now, years ago, I lived in Nova Scotia, and there was a larger African-Canadian community living in the city of Halifax, and there was, like, a lot of, like, barbershops and places for African-Canadian people to get their hair done. And I lived in the neighborhood that was predominantly African-Canadian. And there's a lot that goes on with the hair of people from African descent that is not part of the life of Caucasian people. So it seems like a strange detail, but it's telling of what her emphasis is. And it's a fair emphasis because she herself is an African-American lady, and she's done films like, for instance, she did the film Selma in 2014. So she has that emphasis. And again, like, this is one of these movies where there are these kind of surface things that are there that are so easy for people to talk about, that, and because of the, you know, politically charged nature of everything that everybody does in North America these days, it just becomes something that people are going to just bite on and grab onto so easy, and maybe too easily, because if you're so focused on that, you're not going to get to the point where you can say, this is just not a good adaptation of the book. And then the question is the book that good in the first place? I think that's the question eventually you want to ask.
Well, let's get to that in just a moment. You say that the film adaptation essentially removes the mystery and wonder from what did exist in the book itself. How's that?
Okay, well, I reread the book recently in advance, knowing that the movie was coming out. Now, I hadn't read it since I was, like, I don't know, 12 or 14 years old or something. I don't know. But the whole idea is that it literally starts at the beginning. It was a dark and stormy night. So you get this kind of sense of mystery. You're getting fed little bits of information, a little bit at a time. You don't know what's going on exactly. Even when Mrs. Watsit shows up, she's this disheveled, almost like a homeless person. And then later it's revealed that she's actually more transcendent than that, quote unquote, that she's this star in the universe and that she's like wondrous and etc. And there's this moment where she turns into this like centaur with like wings for arms, and they kind of go on a part of their journey like that. Well, Reese Witherspoon is like presented right from the beginning like a fairy godmother, like a Disney fairy godmother. She's already resplendent when she shows up. So when she wanders into the house, it's not like a homeless lady has wandered into the house. It's like a fairy godmother has wandered into the house. So that instantly changes what the book was doing. Like that's a choice that the film made. So it just kind of like the slow burn that like building towards something is jettisoned out the window. Also in the book, there's a lot of stuff in there about perception where, you know, you think that something is one way, but it's actually another way. And instead of starting it out with it being the one way and going into the other way, it's one way all the way through. So even the character of Mrs. Witch, played by Oprah Winfrey in the book, she's literally like a Halloween witch, like with the peaked hat and the big nose and the broom kind of thing. But they don't do that with Oprah. Oprah looks like Beyonce right from the beginning. Not like Beyonce, but dressed like Beyonce, kind of like a sort of a thing, like a goddess Beyonce all the way through the whole movie. So they don't build this kind of sense of, I don't know about this, but turns out it's not as bad as I thought it was. They don't have that, right? So even there's a part later in the film that they almost completely took out, where the character in the book, Meg and her father, they end up on this other kind of ice kind of world, and there's these hairy monsters there that don't have eyes and talk telepathically and have four arms for tentacles and stuff, and they're very fearsome and frightening looking, but they turn out to be very wise and gentle and kind. And again, it's this lesson of, you know, don't judge a book by its cover, etc. But this is something that's just over and over and over again not in the film. So these are sometimes like fantasy elements that contribute to the mystery and the unfolding story, and it's just not there in this film.
Two final questions for you. You say it does disappoint in special effects. It just technically does not deliver what audiences may expect today.
Yeah, it's kind of boring in a couple spots. Again, maybe I was ruined by having reread the book so close to watching the film, and maybe I have an overactive imagination, but as I read the book and then as I watched the movie, I was like, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit options that they could have taken. And what seems to happen is that, like, and I saw one little tiny video about this where they were talking about the part where Mrs. Watsit turns into the centaur, the flying centaur and everything from the book. And the director said, well, people have seen centaurs lately on movies and things, so we don't want to do that. We want to do something different. So instead they turned it into like this cabbage-headed flying carpet thing. Well, that is different, I'll grant it. And that is not terrible special effects. But if that's the idea that has run through the choices that were being made, there are spots where it's like, yeah, some of these scenes might seem derivative because the book was written in 1962 and there's been a lot of water under the bridge for fantasy films and there's been a preponderance of them. But if you want to try to be true to the source material, maybe do it the way the source material has it, but then perhaps try to do it in a unique way. Instead of being unique, you know, just tossing it all out and doing something completely different and actually boring is not helpful. So when they finally get to the evil force that they're confronting, it's called It in the book. In the movie, it's very boring. Like, and not like boring on purpose, like evil is actually boring or something profound like that, but just kind of boring. So that's not a particularly good thing in terms of special effects when, or just like the whole production design and everything, when it comes across very boring. So there's a couple spots where the special effects are pretty neat, like all these little talking flowers and stuff is quite well done. But then there are these other spots where it's just like really, really dull.
Finally, then, this is aimed at kids and up. Would you recommend people who are looking for a children's movie to take their kids to A Wrinkle in Time?
No, I wouldn't recommend it. There's some stuff dealing with the young boy in it who's like, I don't know, 5 or 6 years old in the story, and named Charles Wallace. And that boy is, there's some kind of really, I don't know, it comes across like mean-spirited and like uncomfortable. Sadly, he's given too much to do in terms of the acting. He's not a very good actor yet. Like, he's only 6, so like, cut the kid some slack, right? But the stuff that happens, like in the book, he gets kind of possessed by the evil. And it's not the kid speaking, it's the evil speaking through the kid in the book. But in the movie, it's really the kid speaking. So this kid is saying things that are very mean-spirited and uncomfortable. And I think that that's another moving away from the way the book is written that in the end is not helpful. And I don't think that a family with young kids picking a movie to go see, that this is really the movie. Like, and in fact, you know, like, this is probably not going to garner more readers for the book, which is not a bad thing. And I can't imagine that this is really going to carry through to, you know, 3 more movies, because there's 4 books in this series that potentially could be turned into movies.
You can read Pastor Ted Geese's review of A Wrinkle in Time at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
In hour 2 of Issues Etc. today, we're going to talk with Pastor Will Whedon about a hymn that is attributed to St. Patrick, I Bind Unto Myself Today. We'll be studying that hymn right after the break. Hour 2 of Issues Etc. in 5 minutes.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
What makes Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, Illinois so special? Our new members talk about the family atmosphere, the welcoming people, and the outstanding music. But most importantly, you'll be confronted with your sin and comforted with the assurance that Jesus has removed that sin so that you can live each day as His baptized and forgiven child. Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church is at 612 North State Street in Freeburg, Illinois. Sunday worship is at 9 a.m., Sunday school and Bible classes at 10:20 a.m. Call 618-539-5664.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. thecleaningauthority.com.